The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So for those of you who were here last week, I gave a talk and some little discussion around the topic of fear in the first of a series of talks on different emotions and the practice of mindfulness in relationship to emotions. And there was some discussion at the end about what the topic would be for today. Anger was apparently of interest. But after I went home, and the next day or so I was thinking about it, and I thought that we're not finished with fear. Or maybe I'm not. So I thought there seemed to be a lot of energy or a lot of interest in this topic of fear. I think it's one that's pretty pervasive among people. So I thought I would talk a little bit more about it and ask you a series of questions. There's many things that people can be afraid of. But if we analyze why we're afraid of them, what we're actually afraid of, sometimes it's interesting to kind of realize that maybe we're not always so clear about what we're afraid of. So one of the great fears that people have is a fear of death. And being able to somehow come to terms with death is a very important part of hopefully any spiritual tradition, but certainly a Buddhist tradition. And in Buddhism, people will actually practice very explicitly around the theme, the topic of death, and a variety of ways. Sometimes even going and finding an opportunity to visit a corpse and spend time with that and somehow work with the feelings that come up, the thoughts that come up, the reactions that come up. But what are we afraid of? What are people afraid of when they're afraid of death? And there's a surprisingly wide range of responses. There are some people who have no fear of death at all, but what they're afraid of is the suffering of dying. That's what they're concerned about. Then there's people who are quite afraid, not of the process of suffering, but of some of the idea they have of annihilation that death implies to them. That's some the big vacuum that they fall into, just complete that emptiness or blank. Some people, especially people who believe in rebirth, occasionally people are quite afraid of what's next. It's not just a blank, but rather it's, if your karma is going to come back. They say that what is it that gets reborn, and it's your karma, the momentum of your karma. They say, so if your karma has been unskillful, unhealthy, then you might come back as a frog, and maybe that's okay. Come back as there's all kinds of terrible returns that's possible. So some people are actually afraid of that. That's what they're afraid of. Sometimes people are afraid of losing the connection to their loved ones. Somehow that's kind of the loss, separation. That's what they're most afraid of. Some people are afraid of, they're not afraid of death for themselves, but maybe they have responsibilities for other people. And so the fear has more to do about the suffering that might visit the people who are left behind. Like people sometimes who have parents who have children. Sometimes I've known parents who have not been afraid to die until they had kids, and then once they had kids, well, they didn't want to die until at least the kids are grown up, and so there's a certain fear for the consequences there. I knew one person who died, and one of his fears around dying was that he was not going to die right. Is there a right way of dying? And he bought all these books on death and dying, kind of like to learn how it's done, so he can be sure to do it right. I think most people succeed. Sooner or later. And so it's kind of, you know, it's kind of a little bit odd to associate the whole process of dying as something that you have to succeed at doing just the right way, make it look right. And he'd be involved in spiritual practice. So some people who are involved in spiritual practice sometimes have very high criteria of what it's supposed to look like when we die. And they're afraid of not dying that beautiful, beatific, kind of fading into the white light, or whatever it might be. So there's a range of things people can be afraid of. And once we kind of go behind the veil of a generalized fear of death and look at the details of it, then it becomes a different exploration, different thing that we're looking at and working with. So I think the call with any fear, one of the calls, one of the great approaches to it, is to question it. What is this fear about? What are we afraid of? What are we really afraid of here? And then once we kind of get a sense of what we're afraid of, then to decide what's the best way of practicing with it, what's the best way of working with it. And there's a variety of choices that we have on how to work with fear. One choice, which is quite popular in places like in monastic circles or in traditional Buddhist circles in Southeast Asia, is to use the strength of the mind to overpower that part of us that's afraid. So through a strong willpower, especially developing strong concentration, to overcome the fear, to develop a mind that's clear and unhindered by the fear. And so you find a lot of stories in Thailand, for example, of monks who will go off into a place, meditate, some place where it's scary. And a scary, very scary place for a lot of these monks in Thailand is cemeteries or charnel grounds. And especially in the old days when they would burn the bodies and leave them kind of smoldering for a while. Or they go and meditate deep in the jungles where there were tigers, or are tigers still, or wild elephants. And they go meditate places like that because they wanted to confront their fear. And then how they would confront their fears, in the stories, at least they come down to us, the ones that survived, is they would talk about being really still and being in meditation and developing their meditation. Say, well, if I'm going to die, this is a good way of dying, and I'm just going to focus on my meditation object and really stay concentrated. And they would sometimes write graphically about breaking out in sweat and all that. And I think it was Ajahn Chah that wrote about being at one of these charnel grounds, one of these places where they burn bodies. And I guess there's a variety of different states of decay, bodies around, at night, middle of the night, sitting there meditating, and then hearing footsteps. Your eyes are closed, right? So the footsteps at the charnel ground, you know, must be pretty scary. Ghosts, monsters, the dead. I don't know what they were afraid of, but then they'd break out in sweat, be quite afraid, but be committed to stay there, hang in there, and they would focus on their meditation practice and try to have it until at some point they overrode their fear and the mind became clear and peaceful. And then they would survive until the morning and they were untroubled. Stories of tigers growling nearby and the monks, you know, just doing the same thing. So that's one approach, is to use the strength of the mind, the concentration of the mind, to overcome it. And, you know, most of us don't go looking for tigers, that kind of trouble. But some people do. Sometimes will choose to confront what they're afraid of and not work through the fear, but rather override the fear with the strength of mind. Sometimes it's very wise, sometimes necessary to do that. There was one woman here who went on retreat with me in Boulder Creek, in a retreat center we use there in the Redwoods. And she was camping. And she'd apparently, I don't know if she'd ever camped before by herself in the woods, but she chose to camp over the hill, over a little kind of away from everybody else in the woods, some distance. And she came for a series of interviews with me the next few days, talking about how afraid she was to be out there in the middle of the woods by herself and how she wasn't sleeping. And there were the footsteps, you know, deer or raccoons or something probably. And it kept her awake. And after some days of this, I said to her, you know, why don't you just come move your tent closer, you know, and you know where everyone else is. And she said, no, I'm going there because I want to confront that fear. I want to meet that fear and work with it. She had, hopefully had enough sense that that was a safe place to be. It was mostly deer and raccoons. But she wanted to meet that and really work with it. So when she said that, I said, fine, you know, please, that's a worthwhile thing to do. So there's many things that people are afraid of, and I think overriding it sometimes is very wise, because one of the things we're most concerned about, one of the things we're concerned about with fear, is that fear not limit us. And if fear doesn't limit us, then you know, we're not limited, and then we can hopefully make wiser choices of what to do. Another approach with fear is not to override it, but rather to weaken its pull and hold on us, not by a strength of mind to override it, but rather to look at it directly and use the mindfulness to meet it and confront it and hold it in awareness and find a way to hold it in awareness with mindfulness that's maybe soft or open or spacious, then kind of hold it and be there. Learn the skills of mindfulness to bring presence to it, and in that presence dissolve the hold that fear has on us. So one just completely ignores it, and this one actually directly looks at it, and that looking at it somehow dissolves the power that it has over us. A third approach is to analyze the fear, to spend some time actually thinking about and reflecting, what is it that I'm afraid of? And what is this fear about? And as I said last week, what is it that's being threatened? Because sometimes what's more interesting is not what we're afraid of out there, but rather what we think is being threatened in here. And it could be that what's being threatened in here is actually not something that is threatenable. Or maybe it's not something we want to protect because it's kind of, maybe it's our self-image that maybe we're too caught up in. So to override it, to hold it in mindfulness, and then to analyze it, are at least three very significant ways of dealing with fear. A fourth way that comes also from some analysis of it is to decide the fear is healthy and worthwhile, and then act accordingly. And that also should be taken very seriously as an option, because otherwise, you know, you don't want to just kind of use stupid meditation to kind of, you know, overcome fear that is there for a very good reason. So that is a background. Now I have a question for you. What's scary about spiritual practice? What's scary about meditation practice, Buddhist practice, or spiritual practice in general? So what do you think? This is your chance to say, tell me.
I think mostly it's losing whatever concept of yourself you had that made you feel like a person in the world, in relationship to yourself and to the world.
Okay, so losing your concept of self, that you have to orient yourself with the world and others. Okay.
I think maybe the idea of fooling yourself, like you think you've gotten somewhere where you feel better, and then being afraid that maybe you won't, or you'll find out later that you weren't where you thought you were. Yeah, you hadn't achieved that.
I see. So fooling yourself, somehow thinking you have some spiritual attainment that just fools gold. fools gold. Spiritual attainment.
For me, I'm afraid that as I go further down the path, I'll realize that it's asking things of me that I know I should do that I don't want to do.
Uh-huh. So I'm not going to go down that path because I don't want to have to do things that I don't want to do.
I'm lazy.
Good. I don't know if you care to say, but do you have any things in particular you could imagine that someone would be afraid of?
For the Buddhist ideals particularly, I feel that I will always go after mosquitoes. I always go after termites. And I love a good cocktail sometimes. So.
If I could elaborate on that a little, I can give a very specific example of that with wise speech, which I can find very intimidating when I read some of the suttas, and it is reinforced to me that I should be mindful before I speak and as I speak and after I speak, and to check in with these things. And that there's times that are appropriate to speak and not appropriate to speak. And things that, while somebody might want to say, they're not, you shouldn't say them. And you know what I mean.
Right.
That can cause great anxiety, that kind of thing. And a lot of fear that I'm not going to do it right. That I'll fail.
You know. So coming to spiritual teachings, there's teachings about right speech and reflecting and not causing harm. And so once you have that standard, then you can measure yourself against that standard, and then you can fail, and fail as a spiritual person or fail as a human being. And
you can fail every day, multiple times a day.
Fail every day. The more you learn about spiritual ideals, the more you can fail. You were better off before you learned about spirituality, because then you just kind of went through life and bumbled, and you didn't realize it was a problem. And now everything's a problem. Good. There's also the fear that the teacher might call on you. Can you give it to him? Let him see right here next to you, Robert. See what Robert says.
I didn't hear what you said. I'm sorry.
What can people be afraid of? Why is spirituality scary?
Because everything at some point or another gets left behind. Everything gets challenged, everything gets changed, and it can be very unsettling.
Thank you.
I'd follow up on that. It kind of more specifically, I really notice that my feeling of connection with my family and friends of origin has really diminished.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've really had a felt sense of loss of, I think, kind of shared world view. That they seem to say, well, you know, look, you know, common sense tells you this. And, you know, as Einstein said, common sense are all those prejudices you learn by the age of 18. Mm-hmm. But most people don't see it that way. So, you know, there's kind of that loss of connection.
So you can use the fear of that loss. And so there's as a loss begins to happen, sometimes it does, fear there's going to be more of that, perhaps.
Right.
Loss of certain relationships, certain connections, certain shared understandings. Okay, thank you. Gail.
To follow up on that a little bit, there's a fear of just not having anything to cling to work toward, even the loss of meaning, of a meaningful goal. I mean, there's the goal of awakening for sure, but when I realized that all of my ideas about that are just that, and there isn't anything there either. that gets pretty scary. And also, I'd agree with the fear of failure and something being wrong with me if I'm not in a certain state of mind or, you know, having trouble being in some idea of what the right state of mind is.
So, you know, if you're angry, then you're... So some people being angry is proof that you're a failed Buddhist.
Right, or even grumpy.
Oh, grumpy. It can be pretty annoying, this Buddhism stuff. You know, you hold it up as, you know, standard you're supposed to measure yourself by. So it was interesting, Gail, what you said about also that perhaps as a person does a spiritual practice, it doesn't have to just be Buddhist practice, but anyone, that sometimes there's a reevaluation of one's priorities, what one's life is about. And a lot of things fall, you know, don't have the same allure or promise or enchantment or have so much meaning. And we might be replaced with some kind, something like enlightenment, but enlightenment seems so distant and maybe even irrelevant to what's possible for me. So then where am I then? Something like that. Yes.
Well, first of all, yes, a big yes to everything that has been said so far. And then I've been working with vulnerability and meeting strength with vulnerability. And I witness a tremendous amount of fear still in going to fear and resistance often when confronting strength and seeking and not always finding that place of vulnerability.
So you're finding fear in meeting strength in others or in the world around you or in yourself?
Well, I don't have fear in meeting strength with strength.
Uh-huh.
I have found success, a spiritual success, in meeting strength with vulnerability.
Other people's strength.
Other people's strength, uh-huh, with vulnerability. That has led me to some lovely realizations, and I wish that meant that I could find that space with some degree of ease every time, but I witness over and over again the mounting fear, mm-hmm, in essentially what that means is letting go, an, yes, ultimate letting go, that fear of annihilation, but it comes up for me as fear in being vulnerable.
Mm. Thank you. I mean, I suppose it has to be that way, because can there be vulnerability without fear?
Very good point.
Yes.
So I'm afraid of, I don't know if it's the spirituality part or not, but my biggest fear in life, I think, is the fact that I'm on a path and I don't know if I will see enlightenment or I've seen enlightenment, or I keep thinking like life is always kind of going into the next and the next and the next, and that I'd live to be 70 or 100 year old or something and then find out that I didn't live my life right.
Mm. So that's a possibility for anyone, that they look back at their life and realize they didn't live a good way. But you're afraid that in following a spiritual path that you might come to the same understanding. Oh no, I took the wrong path, or I made the wrong choices on the path.
No, I've never seen the truth.
I never saw the truth.
Till, yeah.
I committed myself to this path that's supposed to go to the truth, but after 70 years, all this huffing and puffing, you know, the truth didn't come. And so the fear of that is a disappointment or being let down.
Yeah, I don't know if it's connected with spirituality specifically, but it's in general in life that I will get to the end of my life and realize that I lived life wrong, or I didn't see whatever I was supposed to see and, mm-hmm, do.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. Did we exhaust the possibilities? Are we all? Oh.
I have the fear that as my spiritual practice matures and I kind of relax and open a little bit more, that I'm more sensitive to the suffering of others. And so the fear of being overwhelmed by the suffering that is out there.
There's a lot of fear in me. One of the things that causes a lot of anxiety and fear in me is the suffering of the world with global warming, and it is overwhelming. That I'm talking about people, but also animals, plants, and the suffering of the earth. And it feels overwhelming. It's really, I think about it all the time. But and coming to terms with that in my practice and understanding that, maybe it's okay that there is going to be this suffering, that there is this suffering, and that is the way it is. And it's not on my shoulders to change, interpret, go out and change the world. Except, I keep trying in my backyard, and that creates a struggle for me. The other suffering I have is that as I become more aware, I've always been a very goal-oriented person, and as I become more aware of the process and where my mind is moment to moment as I'm, emptying the dishwasher and doing the laundry and, I have to get out of the door and, get to work, whatever. There is an understanding of how unsatisfactory my interpretation of where my mind is as I live my life moment to moment, and there is a fear that I will only experience the unsatisfactoriness of it, and that I will not get to the point, maybe it goes back to my goal-oriented perspective, but that I will not get to the point where I will experience that, no, this is satisfactory, this is okay.
Great, thank you.
It's kind of the struggle between my physical and my spiritual, always being present in a physical way and working on a spiritual idea of nothingness and expansion and going into a realm where I can be in the spiritual, struggling with my everyday physical world where, the mundane is continually pressing on you, and then trying to become a spiritual being and releasing all of that physicality and wanting to just realize the spaciousness of the spirituality and not get hung up on all the physical attachments.
Mm-hmm. Great. So I can understand. I can understand the tremendous struggle with that. What's the fear? The fear
is losing the physical. When you were talking about death, just losing that physical ability of being able to wake up in the morning and be something. Rather than knowing that one day they'll be either the nothingness or just the part of it all type thing. Uh-huh.
So a fear that arises from a very strong separation or duality between the a spiritual realm and a physical realm.
Right.
And somehow those two are not going to connect or work together.
Right. There's a strong separation there. For instance, you know, when just on an everyday meditation situation where, you know, just coming in and out of the physical world and going into a meditational situation, you know, just that separation is kind of a jolt sometimes, and knowing that one day that it will all just be the spiritual is kind of a fear.
Great. Thank you.
Sometimes I'm afraid of, if I think about it, being overtaken by other people's fear. Sometimes I'm afraid of that. Like, I think of, there's a scene in the movie The Titanic where the panic made it such that all you could do was panic. And sometimes I'm afraid of that.
And how's that? It's a very understandable fear. And can you connect that fear to spiritual practice?
Well, I'm taught things. So my practice here is new.
Yes.
So it's a practice against a history that's different. And so I was taught many, many things, scary things, that I've let go of, and I don't think about them anymore. But sometimes I just don't know. I think awakening, that there's something comforting about being asleep.
Good. Thank you. And certainly I apologize to you or anyone if there's a growing sense of foreboding here tonight, as we're going through, you know, listing all these kinds of fears, and some of you might be new here and said, "What have I done? what are these people about?" So there was, I saw someone. Oh, okay.
I have a very real fear of becoming a hermit.
Why is that scary?
Maybe in the spirit of what Elaine was saying earlier, and there being global needs, and really a lot of cause for engagement,
mm-hmm.
I have a fear that I'm going to become too peaceful.
Too indifferent.
Yeah, that's...
For you, peacefulness somehow is in opposition with...
Or I'll see it as suffering, perhaps, that needs to happen, as someone else was saying. It just needs to play itself out,
so
and I'll disengage. I'm hesitant to say indifferent, but it's...
So you're afraid that the practice is going to cause you to be disengaged, indifferent, kind of aloof or detached, and so you're not going to respond to what's...
Not aloof or indifferent. It's like... Equanimous in a cave someplace.
Equanimous in a cave. Okay.
Yeah, and I think it just, you know, at the root of it is maybe some other comments too. You just have these frame shifts sometimes where you reevaluate some things.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's just interesting to consider if I have a frame shift and it pushes me away from service work or from engagement work, it could totally happen. And it's just interesting to be aware of.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
So someone, yes.
One thing that I fear pursuing a spiritual practice is sometimes I fear that I'll become unfit for modern life. And that for over a decade I worked in a place that was very high pressure and busy, and I see all these people who are able to do that, and I can't do that anymore. And it really is a fear. Am I going to be unfit for modern life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe so. I was reminded today that some years ago, 3-4 years ago, I gave a day-long retreat here for mostly a group of 40 or so ninth graders. And it was a very nice day. They were engaged in meditation and teachings and discussion for quite a while, until right near the end of the day, I happened to mention to them that the last time I knew what was on television was in 1972. And I could see my credibility just drop, you know. It's like, and I had to kind of speed things up a little bit, kind of get them back and engaged and take me seriously. So you know, I'm unfit too, unfit for television. So. Okay, so thank you for all that, and I appreciate it a lot. I think it's very important to name these things, especially for some people for whom they're actually active and present for them as they engage in meditation or Buddhist practice or spiritual practice, to really look at these things. And as we look at them, it's important to address them in different ways. Some of them require further analysis, consideration, maybe discussion with a teacher. Oh, no one said they were afraid of the teacher. I'm not really doing my job. Not enough people around here are afraid of me.
Watch more TV.
I'm afraid
of you.
Oh, good, good. Finally. And anyway... So to analyze, the fear, and maybe talk to a teacher or talk to friends and see, what's really the basis of it, and is it really a reasonable fear to have? Some fears arise because we hold things too idealistically. Some fears are mentioned today had to do perhaps with success and failure. I don't want to be a failure. I don't want to fail. And what's that about? Who's failing? What's failing? In whose eyes are we failing? Sometimes people are afraid of what happens to them in spiritual life because they're afraid of what other people are going to say about them and see them. I mean, failing modern life is not a problem, but the fact that everyone will reject me if I'm no longer fit for modern life, that's maybe, that fear of rejection is maybe bigger. So we need to kind of begin teasing apart and looking more deeply at what it is. Also part of that analysis is to really get a better sense of what spiritual, I'll say this way, if you're doing Buddhist practice, to really get a good sense of what Buddhist practice really is. It's very easy to approach Buddhism and with generalizations, vague ideas of what it is, and sometimes it's important to kind of get down to specifics to really understand what the path is, where the path is found, where practice, the heart of the practice really is. And it might be that it doesn't reside in the generalizations that give birth to fears, but it resides in something much more immediate that can be worked with here and now. Some of these fears maybe are fears which we need to overcome, not stand in the way of our practice. And sometimes we just have to barrel ahead in spite of them. Sometimes we need to turn around and actually look at the fear more carefully and bring it into mindfulness. And one of the very interesting movements that happen in mindfulness is we start questioning the role that thoughts and ideas have in our life. And a lot of the people, a lot of things that people are afraid of, especially when there's anxiety involved, ongoing fears, have more to do with specific or very vague ideas about things. And so, for example, I can be afraid of what some spiritual experiences are going to do to me. Some, if I get enlightened, maybe I won't be able to find my car keys. But then if you turn around and look, that's just a thought in the mind. Car keys thoughts, a thought in my mind. That's what it's, you know, what's that about? Just a thought, just an idea, words going through my mind. To question the role of words that we tell ourselves, the image that we tell ourselves, so they don't have the last say about what our experience of reality is. One of the things that mindfulness can help us do is to realize that there's a presence, there's a way of being in the world, there's a freedom in the world that's outside of or steps out of the tyranny of words and ideas, of thoughts. Not to dismiss thoughts and ideas. They have a very important role in our life, an important role in finding the path. But to realize the something about the dreamlike quality of words and ideas can help us put us much more fully into this world here, the present world, not in some kind of abstract spiritual world. And it's in this present world, the concrete present world here, the real world, where freedom is possible, the real world where some kind of, where the path is found. And so the degree to which thoughts and ideas take us out of the real world into some abstractions, idealism, you know, it's easy to be afraid. But if you kind of learn not to live in the world of ideals, but learn to a wise way of living in the world that's actual, it's actually a lot safer. And also that's where the Buddhist path is found. That's where liberation is found, not in some abstraction. And as we kind of, I think one of the great powers of the Buddhist path is that it shines a mirror back towards us to a connection to what is actually real. And when once we're really in touch with what's more real, then you can, it's more obvious what, where our safety is. It's obvious where compassion is. It's obvious where responding to the world resides. This doesn't follow it exactly, but some years ago I was working with a woman who had many years of meditation experience, but she and never really brought her much mindfulness or any mindfulness to her fear. And she had a fair amount of fear. She had some ability to be present and be concentrate, but so we did a guided meditation. I did a guided meditation with her, and I asked her to get quiet a little bit, and then to evoke this chronic fear that she had, and then turn around and look where did that was that fear in her body? Where was it located? And I don't remember where she said, but maybe she said it was in her chest. So, okay, go into your chest and feel the fear there. And what does it feel like? And she described how it felt like. So, okay, stay with that fear. And stay with the feelings there that you have. And notice what happens to it. And because she was a relatively good meditator, meaning she could concentrate well on it, not get caught up in thoughts and ideas and reactions, just to kind of be present for it, the sensation she had of fear in the body disappeared. And when it disappeared, I said, now what happened to the fear? And her eyes popped open. And she thought, she thought I'd done some kind of trick. You know, where's the fear? she was kind of disoriented that the fear could go away that quickly, by bringing careful attention to just feel and be present for it. But it was kind of like this Aikido thing, where you turn towards the fear to act the concrete experience of fear, not the abstract thing we're afraid of, but the concrete experience in the body, and really feel and be present for it, that the fear dissipated. And then, well, if the fear is gone, then what? You can bring it up again, if you'd like. it taught her that the fear was not a solid thing, that the fear was not something that was kind of part of the operating principle of life. It wasn't part of the hardware, but rather it was something that comes and goes. And if it comes and goes, then it's not solid. Then she could have a different relationship to the fear. She didn't have to give it so much authority. And as you give a fear less authority, then it has less, limits us less in our life, and we can act in spite of it and kind of find our way through life. I think that any spiritual discipline, any spiritual practice, that doesn't have fear as part of it is not a real spiritual path. And if it doesn't mean that you're supposed to run out here and get afraid. But as you do the path, hopefully you feel safer. Hopefully you feel like it protects you and supports you and nourishes you in many beautiful ways. And mostly that's what you experience. But sooner or later, you're going to meet fear. And if you haven't met fear as part of your spiritual path yet, and you've been doing this for some time, then you should maybe kind of look more deeply. Maybe you need to question more deeply what you're doing. Because sooner or later, some meeting of fear, because something we're asked to look at, to confront, to be honest about, perhaps to let go of, perhaps to change. And one of the fears, it wasn't explicit, but implicit in many things people said, one of the fears that people can have is the fear of change. And if you're going to change through a spiritual practice, that can be scary. So I'll end with telling you a koan from the Zen tradition. And the koan is... it's a simple question. What do you do when you climb to the top of a 100-foot pole? You got to the top of the pole, what do you do then? It's kind of scary up there. And the answer that's sometimes given is you step off. So that's a kind of a koan that people interpret in many different ways. And in terms of the spiritual life, maybe climbing the pole is some great attainment. What do you get? What do you do when you get that great attainment? You let go. You step off. Don't hold on. So, and then I'll say one more thing, even though I said I would say. There's a beautiful image or story that's sometimes told. The idea of, you know, letting go. Letting go can be scary. And then you let go. And you fall. And it's scary to fall. You fall. It's really scary to fall. Because the faster you fall, you know, the harder you're going to hit the bottom. You keep falling and falling. Until finally you realize there's no ground to hit. And then it's fine to fall. Then it's kind of like flying. So to let go might seem like free fall. But maybe there's some very deep letting go in the heart, where the heart is set free and it flies rather than splats. So may you all become fearless. May you all become free of fear. Thank you.